Live on the returning, for people who don't already know, the returning Show Sports Club. I'm your host, Jeremy York. Of course, I am joined today by the amazing and comparable Cody Elias from 95.7 The Game. How you doing, Cody?
Jeremy, my friend. I feel like we've been talking weeks.
Yeah, it was something like that. And I had to, as much as I'm a Nickelback fan, and that is no joke, I couldn't let our sound guy butcher that song anymore, so I was going to cut it a little short. We don't really know what theme we're going to kind of go with at this point, but, you know, at this general speaking, we'll go with Edge of a Revolution there.
You know, Nickelback's from Canada. I'm more of an American kind of guy, so we might have to switch that up a little bit.
Well, we had some other options, but apparently our sound guy couldn't get it loaded. It was not in the right format. And apparently we just don't have those West Coast producer types out this way that know how to get things done.
You know what? I'll let it slide, you know. I'll let this one slide this time.
Exactly. Debut show, that is why we're called Genesis today. It is not because Phil Collins is our guest, although, Phil Collins, if you want to call in, I'm sure we can relate this to sports. But, no, what we really wanted to do going to be our new show here at Impact Media, at least until the foreseeable future of the NFL season starts. Obviously, there's not enough Falcons on to go around each week, so every other week instead, we're going to not only talk Falcons, maybe if there's something going on, we're going to talk NFL, we're going to talk baseball, basketball. Right now, for some reason, the TV here at the studio has cross-country skiing on. You know, something crazy happens there, we're going to talk about it. But Sports Club is when it was started years ago, it molded into an NFL show. This time, Sports Club is going to be an all-encompassing sports show. That way, we can talk about anything. We can have all kinds of guests because I know you know a lot of non-football people. I know a lot of non-football people. We finally have a platform where we can get them on.
No, it's a great idea, and I like that we can do it more than just football because, as I told you before, I'm a huge baseball guy, and with baseball starting up again, and also being here in the Bay Area, we have the Warriors, so a lot of NBA stuff is going on, too, with it being in the stretch run of the season, and the trade deadline just happened today. So a lot of good stuff going on. You got the draft coming up in the combine for football. Also, you throw out hockey because I know a lot of teams are on the bye week, like the Sharks, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Also, Daytona 500 is this weekend. Shout out NASCAR fans everywhere.
Absolutely. But, you know, before we get into that, because we're going to hit a lot of stuff you just said and more on top of that, I want to tell you guys this is not an exclusive club. I want to tell you the three borderline, in parentheses, four ways that you can technically join the club or how you qualify to join the club, because all you really have to do is either listen to the show, follow the live link now, or call the number if you want to listen in. But here's the three possible four ways that you qualify. If you're a fan of sports, if you're a fan of good debate, if you're a fan of myself, Cody, sometimes Reggie will be on, other people may be on, if you're a fan of either of those three things in any capacity, or four, if you just want to download our show and delete it off your phone, just download or delete, I'm okay with that, and I know Cody is as well, right?
Absolutely, Jeremy.
But, you know, where do you want to start?
You know, since it's today, let's start with the NBA trade deadline. A little anticlimactic, I would say. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, obviously a few things happened today, but the biggest name that's moved that I saw was Boogie Cousins just a couple days ago, and everybody tries to figure out who won that particular trade. I think he did. He gets off a team that doesn't want him. He gets onto a team and a fan base that's dying to try to do something, and he's actually paired with another pretty good player. I mean – if I was them, I would put him and Anthony Davis as the down low guys. You can call them centers. You can call them forwards. You can call them fuzzy purple elephants for all encompassing, you know, reasons whatsoever. You have a great point guard who can distribute the ball, you know, kind of. It doesn't have to be a John Stockton type. It can be one who can shoot as well. And then you have two perimeter wing guys who can shoot from anywhere. And that's how I would run the Pelicans.
No, I'm with you. You know, Drew Holiday's having a sneaky good year as the point guard for the Pelicans, and he's out for a while with, you know, the tragic thing going on with his wife. So it's really good to see him having a good bounce-back year. I always was a big fan of his when he played in Philadelphia. You know, I'm with you. I think it was a win for Boogie because he wanted out of Sacramento, although he gave an emotional goodbye. So, you know, he really liked it there. It's just, I don't think that it was a good fit with him. They never put anybody around him because he's such a talented player. I think he's the best big man in the game. A lot of people think Anthony Davis is. Now they both play on the same team, so it's kind of not fair.
Right.
It was definitely a win for Boogie and New Orleans. You know, there's a lot of unfair pressure now on Buddy Hield, the biggest name going back to Sacramento, because Vivek Ranadive, the owner of the Kings, has said that he's like the next Steph Curry. You can't put that kind of pressure on a young kid like Buddy Hield. He's having a decent year as a rookie, but to put that kind of pressure on a kid coming back in a trade, that's a lot of high expectations for a team that's not very good and a guy that's now going to be the focal point of your offense. I don't think it's fair to him.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And obviously my Dallas Mavericks were able to add a player finally that people actually know who he is. So, you know, shout out to the Mavericks for doing that. But besides some of the under-the-radar stuff, what are the big ones that stick out to you or maybe the names that you thought were moving that just didn't quite move anywhere?
You know, I'm really surprised that the Celtics did not try to get Paul George or Jimmy Butler. The Celtics have all those draft picks. They have the Nets projected number one overall pick this year. They have the Nets number one overall pick next year. They have I'm drawing a blank. But they have two other draft picks in 2019 first round. It's Memphis and one other team that they could have traded. Paul George, obviously, he wanted to stay, either go to L.A. or stay in Indiana because that's, you know, he wanted to sign a long-term deal with one of those two teams. But I really thought the Bulls, if they're really trying to rebuild, they should have moved Jimmy Butler to Boston. That's a big move for Boston to get him. But from everything I read, it looked like the Pacers really wanted Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, and a couple other players, and that first overall pick from Brooklyn back in the deal just to get Jimmy Butler, Paul George, sorry. So that's why that deal fell through. So, but I'm not even trying to get Jimmy Butler was something that really surprised me because I think Butler could have been a good fit for Boston, especially if they want to try to take out the Cavs with Kevin Love being out. Other than that, the only other big move really that happened besides the Nerlens and Well trade from the 76ers was the Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson going to the Thunder, which is a good move for the Thunder because now they add Taj Gibson who can play underneath with Steven Adams, and you have Doug McDermott who can come off the bench as a three-point shooter, which is something that the Thunder could use. And that helps Russ Westbrook out a lot as he now has a couple of additional scoring options they really didn't give up much. So it was a win for Oklahoma City. But other than that, I'm just stunned that no other big names moved. You know, Lou Williams moved the other day from the Lakers, which that's a whole thing we can get into too, with the Lakers firing their GM and president of basketball ops. So a lot of interesting stuff happened the last couple of days, but I'm just a little disappointed that nothing bigger happened today.
Yeah, I was going to go somewhere slightly down a different street with the NBA stuff, but I'll make a note of it. Yeah, let's go straight into, I don't know if I texted it to you, but I know I was having a conversation the other day, and our off-air producer, Billy, said, oh, you have to mention what happened in the NBA. And I said, do you mean the Lakers trying to become the Cleveland Browns of the NBA, making completely irrational decisions where you pretty much fire everybody who knows a lot about running a basketball franchise, and you hire, you know, in essence, it's kind of what the 49ers did, even though I like John Lynch in charge of a football team more than I do Magic Johnson in charge of a basketball team.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of true. What the Lakers are trying to do is they're trying to become like the they're trying to model a lot of teams. They're trying to model themselves after the Golden State Warriors. The Lakers actually wanted Bob Myers, the Warriors GM / president of basketball operations, to be their number one choice. But once Bob resigned with the Warriors back in earlier in the season, the Lakers knew that they would have to go a different direction. The one time you could put Bob Myers and the Lakers together is the Lakers' new GM was also a former agent, and that's what for Wasserman Group. That's what Bob Myers was before he became the GM of the Warriors. So you could see that tie there, but the Lakers are going to try to become like the Warriors with all their moves. You know, Magic coming as the president, it's a smart move to bring in a guy that's, you know, the second greatest player to ever play for that franchise. And then he's going to try to bring in Kobe to help bring in free agents. It's just Lakerland has lost his luster. Like, nobody wants to sign big, you know, long-term deals there. You know, they're not attracting the free agents, you know, like I said. So it's really weird because the Lakers, it's such a historic franchise with 16 NBA titles, but Jeannie Buss firing her own brother, it's a big power move. It kind of reminds me of, was it 2015 when Martha Ford, the 90-year-old owner of the Detroit Lions, fired the president and GM for having this, the collapse that they had? I mean, it kind of reminds me of that, but to fire your own brother, I mean, that's a pretty big power move.
Now, do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have a younger sister.
Now, if you two worked in the same capacity, would you fire her?
Yes. Let me put it this way. It depends on what she did, but yes. I know my sister really well. I would get her – yes, I would fire her. It didn't matter if she's doing a good job or a bad job. It's just I am very competitive, and if we're doing the same thing and, you know, she was underperforming or she was trying to keep up with me I would probably fire her, yes.
Well, I laugh not because it you know, it's funny you said that, but I would be the same way. My little brother, even though there's 7 years between us, we're two completely different people. We share a lot of things in common. We get along real well. We've always gotten along real well, but he's kind of more hands-on, mechanical. In fact, he's a big mechanic anyway, very good at what he does. People come from all over to have him work on their stuff or troubleshoot, but if it comes to running a sports franchise or running a super business or something like that, yeah, I'm the one to trust in the family. So I could see if it was running the Lakers that there's a good chance my brother wouldn't even apply because he knows I would fire him at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you because me and my sister are very different in different ways. And, you know, my sister would never know how to run a sports franchise, so that's, I don't have to worry about that part of it. But it's just, like I said, it's just a big power move to fire your own sibling from a job, especially when whatever with Jim Buss, because, you know, he's not the one that stunned me. It was Mitch Kupchak, the GM, because he's been there for so long. He was there for, since what, 2000, and he took over for Jerry West. And it's just like, you know, they won four titles under him, you know, the couple with Shaq and Kobe, then the two with Kobe and Gasol. So it's not like he never did anything. It's just once that Boogie Cousins deal fell through that they were trying to, when they were trying to acquire him, and the Kings wanted Brandon Ingram in the deal, the Lakers' number one pick from this year from out of Duke, that it fell through. I think Jeannie Buss said, that's it. Well, I have it. You know, I've had it. I need to bring people in that can get people to come back to LA, because you're seeing the Clippers take over as the dominant team in LA. And that's not something that's good for, not just for the NBA, but for LA, because the Lakers are the dominant franchise. That's like saying that the Angels are going to take over the city of LA for baseball. Like, the Dodgers are the predominant team down in Los Angeles. So it's a stunning move, but I think it was the right move to make to get, try to get that franchise back on track.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I guess we'll tell, and I do agree that bringing Kobe back into the mix and obviously having Magic Johnson there will actually hopefully influence free agents to want to sign there. That's a problem they've had over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. It's not like Jim Buss has really recruited a big name to come in there, so I guess we could hold that against him a little bit. But, yeah, to me it just shows that the Buss family and the Lakers in general are in such a dysfunction right now that the entertainment value went up and the talent level went down.
No, I agree. I think the last big free agent that the Lakers have signed is Roy Hibbert, if I'm not mistaken.
Like, yeah.
I know he's not a real big name, but, I mean, they haven't been able to bring anybody in. And, you know, if you want to say last big name free agent that they signed, I guess you could say, you know, Gary Payton, when they signed Gary Payton in the mailman back in when they lost to the Pistons in the finals. But I'm with you. They have not been able to bring anybody in. Their young talent has not really developed. You know, Julius Randle is starting to look a little bit better. They have D'Angelo Russell from Ohio State. Brandon Ingram, Jordan Clarkson. They have a lot of good young players. It's just they haven't really gelled yet. And, you know, Luke Walton's in his first year as a head coach, but the Lakers are 20 games under 500 and likely to finish out of the playoffs for the fourth straight year, and that just doesn't happen with the Lakers.
Absolutely. And, you know, that brings us into our last NBA topic, at least for now. I'm not saying we can't circle back because we do it on all the other shows. We'll probably do it on this one. All these moves that did happen and all these moves that didn't happen, this is kind of a debate me and you have had before via text message, but we're going to actually have it a little bit here. First of all, did any of these moves, I like that it showed that some of these teams are really trying to go to whatever next level it is for them, whether that's being competitive or whether that's just not being at the bottom. And then do any of these moves put anybody in contention to take on the top two, or is this still a two-team league with the Cavaliers in the East and the Warriors in the West?
You know, the only move that – it doesn't even scare me, but it's just a move that's good is the move that the Rockets did getting Lou Williams from the Lakers, because that adds another bench scoring piece to them as a team that likes to score a lot of points under D'Antoni's run-and-gun offense. I still think it's a three-team race. We had this debate before. I still think you got to count the Spurs in there because the Spurs are still the – or so that franchise, you know, they won all those titles under Pop with R.C. Buford and Duncan and Kawhi. I still think they're going to be there because they're right there. They're only four games behind the Warriors in the standings. And if you remember, they blew the Warriors out the first game of the year by 30 points. So I still think they're there. Cleveland's a little banged up with Kevin Love being out. They're looking possibly getting Deron Williams because the Mavs are going to waive him. So he could be a good backup point guard option for them. But I think it's a three-team race. And a lot of people think it's two. Boston's right there with the Cavs. I think they're like three games behind the Cavs. That's why I thought them not getting Butler, Paul George was a really, really head scratcher and strange, because they could have caught the Cavs and potentially been their year. You know, so I still think it's three teams. A lot of people would say maybe you can go Boston there. I still think it's three. You have the Warriors and Spurs, and then you have the Cavs. Either way, it's gonna be the Cavs and Warriors probably in the finals. But I can't count out San Antonio yet.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, up until recently I didn't include Boston, but I'm going to include Boston as well. So I'm going to actually say it's a four-team league, at least in my opinion, because Boston is – they're about a half step below Cleveland, but I believe they could beat them in a seven-game series. I don't know that it'll happen this year, but Boston's getting real close. Can't count the Spurs out as long as they got Popovich and Ginobili and Kawhi Leonard for that matter, so – I guess we can agree at this point that it's not a two-team league, but it's either a three- or four-team league. So the rest of the league's got to make a little bit more of a splash than this to be anywhere close.
No, I completely agree. And you know, everyone's going to say the Cavs, but I still, like you said, we both agree. You can't cut out Boston. And Boston has such a good young coach with Brad Stevens. They're only going to keep getting better, especially with all these draft picks. If they can either move a couple of those draft picks and bring in a big-name guy, you know, in the summertime or next year at the trade deadline, Boston's going to be scary with all the young players they have and all the picks, because when you have a guy like Brad Stevens, who's a young coach and he knows what he's doing. I mean, he was already billed as supposed to be the next Coach K when he was coaching at Butler. So he's doing a great job in the NBA, and that was a huge move for the Celtics to be able to bring him in, and the players respond to him. And Isaiah Thomas has put up 30 points a game. This is a guy that the Kings just cast off as they didn't want him anymore. He just got cast off to the Suns, and the Suns traded him away too, and he went right to Boston. He's put up 30 points a game. It's incredible to see the kind of year he's having. He's only behind he's the second leading scorer in the NBA right now. So it's remarkable what they're doing with him and Avery Bradley and all those guys. But the thing that gets that team going is Brad Stevens, because he's such a smart young coach and he knows what he's doing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I was going to mention that as well, that two teams have cast him off, and now Isaiah Thomas seems to be playing better. So, you know, sky's the limit if somebody will actually give him the chance. It looks like Boston's going to, and who knows, Boston could be back in glory as soon as this year, maybe next year.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I was going to circle back on this real quick, but if you go back and look at the last couple of years of the players that the Sacramento Kings just let go, they let go of Isaiah Thomas, who's averaging 29.5, almost 30 points a game. They let go of Hassan Whiteside, who is one of the best big men in the game, and then they traded Boogie Cousins. Imagine if they still had those three guys on that team. They would be a lot better than they are now. So, you know, Isaiah Thomas is getting a nice break in Boston. Whiteside is doing a nice job in Miami. And like we said before, Boogie really won that deal getting out of getting out of Sacramento and heading to New Orleans to play with his teammate, but his Kentucky alma mater friend, Anthony Davis. So interesting times in the NBA, but it's still going to be I still think the Warriors and Cavs will be the teams playing in the finals.
Yeah, I agree there as well. You know, we'll move off of basketball for a minute. Like I say, depending on if somebody calls in or if a special guest joins us or anything like that, we can always circle back. But next thing we want to tackle on Sports Club is baseball has decided, or they finally figured out that their game is running a little longer than it used to. So they've come up with a few ways they think they can actually make it a little quicker. The easiest way that they don't want to do is to eliminate some of the commercial breaks that are about an hour and a half long. But that means less revenue, less money, and we all know that's not going to happen. But the two rules that they're really talking about, and, of course, that is they want to do – there's a extra inning rule they have come up with and a intentional walk rule. If you intentionally want to walk somebody, they've changed those two. Which one of those really jump out? And we'll dig into the other one later.
You know, so the extra inning one where you have to run and start on second base, I don't think that one's going to go through. I think that's a silly idea. I mean, I really do. I know they do that in softball, and they want to try to get it going in the Arizona Fall League and the Rookie League and the World Baseball Classic. The getting rid of the intentional walk is something that's it's a head-scratcher because you're in essence saving 17 seconds by doing that. What are you going to do in that 17 seconds? I mean, come on, be honest. I mean, honestly, I'm a traditionalist when it comes to baseball. I want them to keep the game the way it is. The pitching clock and all that stuff it's a smart idea. I guess you can that helps the game a little bit. I'm with you though. They need to cut back on the commercials. There's way too many commercials. And the one thing I know Rob Manfred wants to, you know, limit the number of relievers you can use. I don't agree with that because that's what some of these guys are only like left-handed or right-handed specialists. So how they make their living. So I don't like the getting rid of the intentional walk. I think it's kind of a waste because it's four pitches. I mean, I guess you can say pitchers' arms by that, but other than that, I don't like it. I just don't think it's something that's really worth you know fighting a battle over.
Yeah, we'll get into the extra inning rule in a minute, but yeah, the intentional walk rule. I know you guys or I know Joe and Dibs and I believe Guru kind of attacked it the other day. Over your way, I want to know what the signal's going to be because that seems to be the hot topic anyway. I like the idea of the manager who wants to intentional walk a batter from the other side having to, like, get on his knees and, like, pay homage or something. I thought that was kind of interesting. But, I mean, what kind of signal could you possibly do that's not going to look like this is some third-grade attempt at trying to fix something that doesn't need to be fixed?
I mean, what they're going to end up doing is they're going to probably just doing the four, like you would see, like, fourth quarter for football. They'll say four, and then there's you'll see the catcher, you know, move out for the four pitch, or like they would do for a pitch out, the walk-in. That's okay. What they're going to end up doing. It's a silly idea. I don't like it. I think it's just a sad attempt to make millennials, even though I'm a millennial, to make millennials more interested in the game. If you're not into the sport, the game of baseball, because of how many intentional walks there are in the game, then you shouldn't be watching it then.
You know, at that point, I kind of want some of these managers to kind of get a little cute with it, I guess is the way to say it. But, you know, as you go to call for the intentional walk, cue up the big jumbotron out in whichever field you happen to have it in. It's dead center field here in Atlanta, or at least it was in the old stadium. I haven't seen where it is in the new stadium yet. But, you know, cue up Ric Flair with the four horsemen there and get a good woo out every time you want to walk somebody. I think that would be a way to get people interested. Because now you're going to show up just to see how many times Ric Flair is going to be on the big board.
As a Ric Flair fan and the Four Horsemen, I think that's actually a pretty smart idea. I think it would get the crowd going. Then you have to be running the risk of this happened a lot when I was living in Pittsburgh as a Pirates fan. When you hear people doing the woo chants throughout the entire stadium, that could get kind of annoying. But that's not a bad idea. That's creative. That's a way to get. You know, that's a way to get the newer and older generations of fans more involved and, you know, have a good laugh and stuff. But it's just, I don't like this idea of getting rid of the intentional walk to save less than 20 seconds a game. Like, it's silly. To me, it's just silly because, like I said, I'm a traditionalist. And I know a lot of people agree that they don't understand why they're doing it. I know a lot of pitchers are, you know, kind of like flabbergasted by it, but if it's going to save arms, I mean, I guess that's great. They're not really throwing hard when they do pitch outs, so it's like you're preventing pitchers from blowing their arms out by taking away the intentional walk.
Well, and there's always that chance that one of those four go to the backstop and a runner moves somewhere. That's you're taking out the human error out of that potential thing, and that's really what can add something to sports. A lot of people, you know, we'll talk about NASCAR in a minute. A lot of people watch NASCAR for the wrecks. A lot of people watch hockey for fights. Well, a lot of times people watch baseball to see somebody mess up, somebody miss a throw, somebody take out a catcher, somebody throw one to the backstop. They watch just for the errors. So now you're taking that out, and so now less people will watch your product instead of more.
Yeah, exactly. And Jason Kipnis from the Indians, I think he tweeted out the other day that he's disappointed by the move because he scored twice on intentional overthrows on intentional walks, and that's what happened to him, you know, last year. So you're right. Getting rid, it's taking away the human element out of things, and it's if you want to do stuff like that, then we should start putting the robot umpires in. So instead of taking away, just take away the umpires and let robots call balls and strikes, because you know, everyone's you know complaining and moaning about balls and strikes anymore. So let's just have robots do it, because if that's what we want to do to speed up the game, we might as well start doing that.
We could always make it into the whatever form, I can't remember the name of it, it's like Gloop Ball or something like that they play on Futurama, where the ball is attached to the ground by a string and you throw it and it only goes so far when you hit it. It's kind of like cricket in a way, but I guess we're kind of going to that form, I guess.
It, like I said, it seems like baseball's trying to appease the millennials. I guess we're both considered millennials, so I guess they're trying to appease people like us, but it's just I watch the game for what it is. You know, when I'm watching a game, I mean, I'm not going to sit on my phone the entire time. I watch the game to watch the game. So, you know, you're not gonna pique my interest by taking away the intentional walk. I'm always going to be paying attention anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm right there with you. My childhood, a lot of times, was, you know, luckily growing up here in Atlanta, we had TBS had just exploded, so not only did we get all the cool WCW stuff, but it was Braves baseball in the evenings most of the time, and we got WGN, so it was Cubs the majority of time during the day. We caught the White Sox occasionally in mid-afternoon, so, I mean, I grew up really on those three teams, so in my childhood, it was you watch the game to watch the game. It's kind of like people that complain about a preacher at church talking too long. The way I was raised is when you go to a game or when you go to church, you're there till the event is over. If you don't want to stay for the whole event, then don't go to start with. So if you think baseball is too long, then maybe it's not for you. Go catch another sport somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't like it, don't go or don't watch. I know baseball's trying to attract the younger audience, which is great because – they have a lot of good younger players like Bryce Harper, Francisco Lindor, Mike Trout. You have so many good young Clayton Kershaw, Madison Bumgarner. There's such a good influx of young players coming up that baseball's trying to capture because you see what's going on with the NBA and the NFL, and there's a lot of good young players in hockey, but hockey's not for everyone. It's more of a niche sport, but and unfortunately because there's a lot of passionate hockey fans out there. But if you really want to watch a game that goes by quickly, then you know. Baseball's not for you because it's going to take at least 2 hours out of your day unless Mark Burley's on the mound, because then you know the game will end in under 2 hours.
Right. Yeah, and you know it's the same thing with golf. A lot of people say golf is too laid back, it's too much of a leisure sport. They either don't watch it or don't play it because it takes too long or something like that. Well, a lot of people enjoy that it takes that kind of time, and they enjoy, you know, taking their time and not feeling like they miss something if they blink. And a lot of you know, a lot of different sports are that way. I know hockey's that way. Football can definitely be that way. Basketball is a little more leisure, but yeah, it's just one of those. We live in America. If you want to watch one sport and one sport only, then do that. If you want to watch multiple ones, that's fine. If you think baseball takes too much time, you can watch something else. In fact, there's probably some new TV show out that you could probably watch that you might enjoy more. So, I mean, to me, if your baseball keeps trying to get new fans into the game, entertain the ones who are already watching and already here, but you know, don't worry about it if even 5 out of 10 don't attend the game. Just let them go do what they're going to do. They'll come around.
I completely agree. I think that, you know, if you, like you like we just both said, if you don't want to go, don't go. Watch something else. Go watch a TV show, because that's okay. I mean,
yeah.
how many kids are you look are you watching now? I know we're trying to peak the appease everyone in society. How many people are everyone's always on their damn phone or iPad or something? You know what? Watch the game on their feet if you don't want to go watch it in person, or watch the condensed game. That's one thing that MLB at Bat app does really well, is you can watch condensed games on there. You can watch a 30-minute game, a 3-hour game in 30 minutes. You can catch all the major plays. Just do that. Just do that. If you don't want to sit there for 3 hours at night, just do that. I mean, just stop complaining and do something else.
Exactly. Yeah, we talked about a lot of the solutions that we had for it anyway. And last bit on all this is the extra inning rule is it's not a new concept. A lot of people texted us in and said, where did they come up with this? This is all new. It's, no, a lot of softball, like you said, have used it. And I actually had the Georgia State University Panthers head coach, Greg Frady, on last week on our Panther show. And he said, this is actually an international rule because he's been the international head coach for Germany. He was the coach there for about 10 years. He's not the coach there anymore. But he said, yeah, this is an international rule. Anytime any kind of international competition happens, I think the World Baseball Classic actually may start adopting this if they hadn't already. But I don't, starting a runner at second base is a whole different thing. And I think it's about as goofy and messed up an idea as this intentional walk rule. Just throw the 4 pitches and get on with it.
I completely agree. I like I said, the only moves that I'm okay with are moves that can conserve pitchers' arms, because there's so many pitchers getting Tommy John surgery done, which is kind of like the norm anymore. Like I said, I'm okay with the pitching clock and the clock between innings, because that kind of speeds up the process and the mound visits. You get 30 seconds for the mound visits and all that stuff, but silly stuff like putting a guy on second base to start extra innings. I mean, come on. Really? We don't need something like that. Baseball is great the way it is. And I'm going to watch it no matter what happens. And, I like Rob Manfred trying to be innovative about what he's trying to do. But some of the moves he wants to do, I agree with, especially the whole, it's not proposed yet, but it's something he's mentioned several times about, cutting back how many relievers you can use. That's what takes away that takes away strategy in the game. If you can't use a lefty specialist, against a left-handed hitter who can't hit lefties, and it takes away the whole meaning of being a manager of a baseball team.
Right. Absolutely. And I know we'll be attacking baseball and praising baseball throughout the summer, and I'm actually going to circle back around to it after we talk a little NASCAR. But before I do, one thing that I am terrible at and our fans give me a lot of crap about is giving shout-outs when people help the show and send us in some fun things. So I'm going to do my best every show to do this, and I will have to look it up exactly. I don't know the social media here, but one of our fans, she's actually a big fan of yours, Christina, I just want to say a special shout out and appreciate you enjoying the show and helping us out with getting the message out and such like that. Like I said, she's a big fan of yours, I'll make sure that maybe your wife didn't hear that, but, shout out to you, Christina. Definitely appreciate the messages and helping get the show out like this. But now we get into NASCAR, and we're just going to kind of hit it real quick. You mentioned Daytona is this Sunday. They're starting the dual races, which is their oddball way of doing a double race format where, based off where you finish, is where you actually qualify in. I don't know why they don't do this more weeks, honestly. But the thing I really wanted to talk about was they have a new rule change, and it affects pit stops. When they come into the pits, if the damage on their car can be fixed in the pit, then they can go back on the track. No problem there. That's kind of what they do now. But if you have to take your car behind the wall, or if it's considered a certain type of damage, you're completely out. The thing is, now there's a 5-minute overall clock, a 5-minute window for any kind of metal work, any kind of sheet work, any kind of, swapping out cords, little small minor stuff. You have up to a total of 5 minutes for the whole race. So if in one stop you use 2.5 of those minutes, you only get 2.5 for the rest of the race. Do you think this is actually going to make NASCAR better, or do you think this is kind of the way baseball is doing? They're overthinking this.
I think it's just like baseball. You're overthinking something to try to speed up a race. I know, what's the average length of a NASCAR race? I mean, what, 2 hours?
No, it's like like I would say 3.5 to 4 probably.
Okay, so I was gonna say 3, but I don't want to sound like it's too high. So you say 3 to 4 hours. So by doing this, you're essentially it's an interesting concept, I guess, from the way you want to do it. I don't know if when rules changes come out. I mean, it comes to everyone looks at it differently, but it just sounds like this is a sad attempt at trying to make change something that doesn't need to be changed. If it's not broke, don't fix it. If it's not broke, don't fix it. You know what I mean? So it's just I don't know. Where do you come on it?
It's, here's what's going to happen because of it. There's going to be a lot less cars that finish races. They start with 43, usually between 4, 5, 6, or 7 of them end up crashing or having some sort of damage enough to where they don't finish. So you usually get about 35 of them that actually finish. Well, the problem is now some of these cars, I think it's a safety issue is what I really think they're looking at, but I don't think they're attacking it the right way because some of these cars do re-enter races. They can't keep up speed. They end up black flagging them, take them off. So, but at some point, they don't want a piece of sheet metal to go flying in the stands again. It's happened a few times, and you can't put the fence so high. But to me, they are outthinking this. I think there's a lot easier ways to do this. The five-minute clock is just gonna tick a lot of these guys off. You're going to see a lot more people saying, well, I probably don't have a chance to win this race, but my teammate does. Let me put enough damage on this other guy who's competing with my teammate's car to where they have to get pulled off, and, that way my teammate wins all the time. You're going to see a lot more demolition derby and a lot more damage, I think.
That's actually, for a lot of people out there, they might actually like that because, like you said, everyone always watches NASCAR for the wrecks. When I put NASCAR on, I watch it to see the strategy behind it and everything. I enjoy watching some guys race and how much endurance and skill you have to be in a car for all that for that length of time. But there are people out there that only watch it for the wreck. So this could actually help the ratings maybe if there are a lot more wrecks because how people are with chaos and so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you got the Daytona 500 this weekend. I don't know if you want to get into this, but who do you like to win the Daytona 500 this weekend?
My typical drivers, my mom watches every race, including the Xfinity Series, which is like the AAA format, too. I think they're having a big shindig at their house this weekend. They always have people over and watch races. But my drivers have always been, at least in the last few years, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch is actually my top driver. So, obviously, I'll be pulling for them. They've got a lot of newcomers. One thing NASCAR has been able to do is, as the older drivers cycle out, the newer drivers coming in are people you can get behind. They're doing a real good job of marketing these guys. You either love them or you hate them. If you like one guy, you're not going to like his rival, but you still respect the sport. It's kind of what hockey does, where you like your team and you like certain players, and you may not like their rivals, but as long as the rival's not playing you, you still like them. It's that kind of thing. But, my pick for this week, obviously, like I said, I'd go Kyle Busch probably. Just because he drives the wheels off a car and then glues them back on and keeps driving, and he's finished a couple races without the wheel on a car. So, you got to like people that do that.
I'm a fan of the younger drivers in NASCAR now, like Kozlowski and Joey Logano and, some of the younger guys. I believe Kyle Busch is a 12-1 favorite to win the 500 this weekend. I think Earnhardt Jr. is like a 5-1 favorite from what I saw in the Vegas odds. I saw like Fortinbaugh now.
Yep.
Just looking at the odds, but.
Yeah, because at this point, only two people are on the starting grid based off the clash or something that happened the other day, or I don't know. They have so many weird offshoot races and so many weird ways to qualify in, but I do know that local to this area favorite, Chase Elliott, actually one of his crew members had a tie to my hometown there for a while. But Chase Elliott, who is Bill Elliott's kid from Dawsonville, Georgia, is on the pole with his good buddy, Dale Jr. second. The rest of it's going to be figured out with these duels. So, I could see Dale being a heavy favorite. I think he's in his last couple years anyway, and Chase Elliott's not ready to win this race, I don't think.
I mean, I like the influx of the young drivers coming up, and I'm with you on Dale because he had that scary injury with the concussion and all that stuff before. So,
yes.
I know he's getting up there in age, so it'll be nice to see maybe a younger guy win this race because everyone says it's a Super Bowl of NASCAR, which it is, and for a season that goes on for so long into the fall, it's a good start because I know how much people really enjoy watching NASCAR. So it's kind of exciting to seeing the season start up again because, you know, I know how excited a lot of people are about it, and it always ends up being a good race on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I know we're running short on time. Real quickly, we'll talk a little more baseball here, and I really just want to get your opinion. Let's see, out there, you guys are the flagship of the A's, correct?
Yes.
Okay, we'll attack them on another day. Which one is it that's your team? Are you the Giants fan?
No, I'm an A's fan.
Okay, A's. All right. Well, we'll attack them. We'll hit the Bay Area in a couple weeks. But I just wanted to get your opinion on what the Atlanta Braves have been doing here recently. And I mean this with all due respect and bless their hearts. But with some of the moves they've made this offseason, and it got even worse when I started looking at the actual depth chart right now, as of today, this Atlanta Braves team here in 2017 looks like the National League All-Star team from 2008. I mean, you got Matt Kemp in left field. You have Nick Markakis in right. You got Brandon Phillips at second. Freddie Freeman wasn't in the league yet, so I can't use him. Who else am I looking at here? You got Bartolo, as I call him. It's their second penciled in starter. Their third starter is Jaime Garcia from the St. Louis franchise. They have R.A. Dickey as well. I mean, they have Kurt Suzuki now as a backup. This is the 2008 All-Star team, is it not?
Pretty much. That's good knowledge. Kurt Suzuki, I forgot Kurt Suzuki was an All-Star for the – was he one for the Twins? I think he was.
I think.
But, yeah, I'm a big Freddie Freeman guy. I think Freddie Freeman is so underrated for what he does playing Atlanta because they've been bad the last couple of years. I'm a big fan of Ender Inciarte, the center fielder. I think he's very underrated. You got Dansby Swanson. That kid is going to be a star. The Braves robbed the Diamondbacks on that trade to get him and a few guys back in that deal when they gave up Shelby Miller. Their pitching staff is not that great. I mean, Teheran is really good. Bartolo Colon will be decent. Jaime Garcia, when he's healthy, he's a little above average. Dickey's like 100 years old, and Fulton Nevich was okay last year. I'm not a Jim Johnson guy. I know he's going to be the closer because he's a former A, and he just stunk. Although he was really good last year. The one guy I do like on the team, and he's not even a player, I'm really happy to see that Ron Washington's closer to home, and he's now the third base coach there. I was actually hoping he would get the job as the manager. But, you know, they gave it to Snitker after they got rid of Freddy Gonzalez. I'm not a Freddy Gonzalez guy. I thought he was the most I didn't think he was a good manager. I didn't think he was a good manager when he managed the Marlins either. I thought he just got lucky with the guys they had in Atlanta, and he was so bad at mismanaging the bullpen. You saw Kimbrel get overused, and then Johnny Venters had an injury. Then Eric O'Flaherty had an injury. He kept using the same guys, and he blew their arms out, and none of those guys are the same. I mean, Kimbrel's the same, but Venters hasn't done anything. I think pitched for the Rays last year, I think. And then you have Eric O'Flaherty, who's moved around like six different times in the last 3 years when those two guys were really, really good, along with Kimbrel coming out of that Braves bullpen. So they're moving to the new stadium this year, right?
Yes. I just passed it the other day while I was on the interstate. Couldn't see it very well because of the tractor trailer next to me, but from what I could see, it looked very pretty and shiny. And it's supposed to be an all-encompassing complex. It's going to have the restaurants, the retail. So it's one of those, if you don't necessarily have to go to the game, you can just be on the property. You can go to one of the sports bars there and watch the game. Or as you come out or before you go in, you can enjoy kind of the shopping mall or those kind of areas before you make it to the game.
Well, see, that's smart because that's what a lot of teams are starting to do because they've actually mentioned that idea here a few times in Oakland about doing that when they build a new stadium for the A's, is they want to have, like, the shopping around it and the food trucks and all that and everything around that. So it's a smart idea to do that because you're going to get more revenue coming in for local businesses than you're going to have people flood over to the new stadium. I just don't understand why they blew up Turner Field already. It was only around for, what, like 17 years, if that?
Something like that because it wasn't that long. I remember going to the first game there. So, let's see, first game was in 90... Seven? That sounds right. Somewhere,
okay.
I think, yeah, 20 years in.
Okay, yeah, so, I mean, 20, I mean, come on, 20 years. And the Georgia Dome was how old? The Georgia, because they both, they're getting the same. So the Georgia Dome was what, like 26 years old or something like that? I think 91 is when it opened?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
And then you have people like the A's who have had the same stadium since 1950-something. It's actually been the 60s, but still.
Or Boston or LA or any of those places.
According to Pacoda's rankings, if anyone goes to Baseball Perspectives, they're the Braves actually winning 76 games this year. 76 and 86, they'll finish fourth in the NL East.
Well, I mean, they had to make these kind of moves because, once again, the NL East is kind of loaded. It's kind of an up and down thing, but you know, you got to look at everybody's still chasing the Washington Nationals, who just added Matt Wieters. I don't know if that puts them ahead of the game, but it puts them a slight step up from where they are. They only get Bryce Harper for another year or two before he becomes a Yankee or a Red Sox. We all know that. So you're still chasing the Nationals. You got to look at the Mets, who have probably the best pitching staff in the whole group. If they ever get their bats to come around, and I say this as a lifelong Mets fan, if they ever get some bats to come around, this team's dangerous. The problem is they can never find a bat when they need it.
Yes, I mean, you're right. The Mets are actually projected to win that division again, as they should, with Harvey coming back and Mats and Thor and the rest of the guys. I mean, they did lose Bartolo, but, you know, they'll be fine with the young kid that the young kid for the last year, his name escapes me now. He was another young kid. They had so many good young guys that fill in for them last year. Lugo, I think it was Seth Lugo. So the Mets will be there. They're going to win the East. You know, the Nationals will still be good. They lost Melanson as their closer, but they got Matt Wieters. They need a catcher because Wilson Ramos went to Tampa Bay. So I still think it's going to be a two-team race there. I think the Marlins will be right around 500. The Phillies are going to finish dead last. I mean, they're still building for the future. So. The Braves finishing somewhere around like 75, 76 wins is a good step forward for them because the last couple of years have been really, really lean. So it's good to see that this could hopefully turn around for them.
We can't turn away, 'cause the sky we are relying on the last. These guys are warriors.